Coming up on Windows Weekly, I, Micah Sargent, am subbing in for Leo Laporte, and we have a great panel today. Of course, Mary Jo Foley, but also Zach Bowden, the senior editor of Windows Central and managing editor at XDA, Rich Woods. Yes, this is a jam-packed show with two great guests. First, we talk about the next version or versions of Windows. Microsoft has a whole new schedule put in place for how Windows will roll out. Every 3 years, new major drops and then some small ones in between. Then the canceled Surface Duo and Zach Bowden's thoughts on the Duo in general. Microsoft working with Netflix and some really important announcements from the Inspire conference before we take some questions from the audience and round things out with picks, tips, apps, and drinks of the week. Stay tuned.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly, episode 786, recorded Wednesday, July 20th, 2022. Windows Ventura. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by SecureWorks. Are you ready for inevitable cyber threats? SecureWorks detects ever-changing threats and defends against them with a combination of security analytics and human intelligence. To learn more, visit SecureWorks.com. And by ClickUp, the productivity platform that'll save you one day a week on work, guaranteed. Use code WINDOWS to get 15% off ClickUp's massive unlimited plan for a year, meaning you can start reclaiming your time for under $5 a month. Sign up today at ClickUp.com. Hurry, this offer ends soon. And by Infrascale. Infrascale delivers industry-leading data protection through backup and disaster recovery. Whatever your data or environment, Infrascale provides continuity and resiliency for your business. Visit infrascale.com/twit to get the free ebook, 5 Essential Components of a Ransomware Protection Plan, and learn how to protect your business today. It is time for Windows Weekly. Yes, I, Micah Sargent, am in today while Leo Laporte is on a cruise. And it is time to talk to some incredible Windows watchers. Up first, it is the one and only Mary Jo Foley. How you doing, Mary Jo?
I'm good. I'm not on the cruise, so I'm here in 101 degree New York City today. It's excellent.
Oh, I am so sorry. I actually don't know what the temperature is here, but I know it's not cool. I can feel that for sure. It's not cool. Yeah, you aren't on the cruise, and I'm happy because that means that this show gets to be something different than it usually is. And I don't even know if we're going to talk about Xbox today. It's going to be, I don't know where we're going exactly, but I believe that you have some guests that you brought onto the show. So tell us about that.
I do. I have two guests today. And people in the Windows world know we're a very tight community, us Microsoft watchers. So all of us know each other really well. And my idea for this show was, let me bring on some people who, if we were just sitting around in a pub, say Rattle and Hum, any pub, these would be the people I would want to be chatting with. So first, I've got my friend Rich Woods, who is the managing editor of XDA. He also, not everyone knows this, he's also the 2015 Lumia Personality of the Year. Not everyone knows this. Rich knows everything about phone cameras. He knows everything about chips. Whenever I need a question answered about Intel roadmaps, AMD roadmaps, Qualcomm, I call Rich. And he knows a lot about baseball. All three of these things are something I know very little about. So he's a handy guy to have around. That's guest one. Nice. Guest two is our friend Zach Bowden. He is a senior editor at Windows Central, but he's way more than just that. He's also a Microsoft prototype hunter. He's a dual screen enthusiast, and he is the aficionado of rounded corners. We will make fun of him about all three of these things during today's show.
Thanks for having me.
I mean, Mary Jo, you're regularly, I hear you talk about these two on the show when you're, talking about new bits of news and you have some little insights. So I think it's a pretty awesome panel you've got lined up here. And I am looking forward
to asking lots of questions, as is my shtick, at the very least, on this show.
Awesome.
So, how are we kicking things off today, Mary Jo?
Well, this was a little bit of luck that we had. Last week, our friend Zach broke a really big story. And when we had him lined up to come on the show today, we didn't know he was going to drop this story last week. but Zach has some information from his sources. I actually should let him explain this about how the Windows schedule may change in the coming months and years.
That. Yeah, so I guess we should just dive straight into it. So I heard a little while ago now at this point that Microsoft was changing up its development sort of cycle or schedule for Windows going forward. And I started asking around about this because a couple of weeks back, Microsoft started testing build 22622 in the Insider beta channel, and they announced that as a sort of enablement package. And I was immediately sort of wondering why they were doing enablement package testing on Windows 11 so early on into its life, right? You know, the enablement package stuff didn't start showing up on Windows 10 until, you know, a few years in. So why were they doing that now on Windows 11? Started asking around, and that sort of opened up I went down a rabbit hole that I was not expecting to go down, and essentially found out from multiple sources at this point that Microsoft is moving away from its annual sort of major release of Windows and is moving to a major release every 3 years with feature drops in between. Now, they call the feature drops moments. We'll get to all of that in a minute. But the big news here is they are going back to one release every 3 years, similar to how they did Windows Vista to Windows 7 or Windows 7 to Windows 8. From Windows 11 to Windows 12, question mark. We don't know what that's going to be called, but that appears to be what they're sort of going for now, starting in 2024. So Windows 11 came out in 2021. 3 years later, 2024, that's when we can expect the next version of Windows. And that's pretty big news, at least to me, because we are going back to the sort of traditional development cycle for major versions of the OS. And will that be a good thing? I want to hear your guys' thoughts, because I know what I think. What do you guys think?
So, I know it is big news, but were you guys expecting this? Because I feel like I was waiting for this to happen at some point. They've pretty much, I mean, we've had Windows as a service with Windows 10 that was originally planned to be the last version of Windows. And then something happened where PCs got popular again. They needed something to make Windows exciting again. They did Windows 11. And I think when Windows 11 happened, it was clear that Windows 12 was going to happen at some point. And then now we're starting to see they're releasing features in many different ways. Insider testing is kind of a mess. You're in different channels. You might get features. You might not. Now there's an enablement package where you can choose to get new features. And it's so much of a mess that you kind of have to start to ask, does it make sense to do yearly updates anymore? Windows 10 is still doing yearly updates with enablement packages, and they don't even have features. It's just like to introduce a new support lifecycle. Like, they could just have the same update and say it ends in 2025. Like, this stuff doesn't make sense to do anymore. So, knowing that there would eventually be a Windows 12, I think every 3 years made sense. And I was kind of waiting for this to happen eventually. Do you guys agree, or?
Mary Jo? No, not really.
No?
Because.
Okay.
Well, okay, so last year they made a huge deal out of having this once a year update, right? Like,
right.
And all the IT people were like, yes, that's what I wanted. I wanted them to only do one update a year. And they had a whole elaborate explanation. They did it for Windows 10, Windows 11. And now it's like, oh, wait, no, actually, just forget that, right? Like, we're going to
But I think things have even changed since then, though, don't you?
They have. Yeah, they have. No, because in February, I think it was February, Panos, remember that blog post when they started talking about, by the way, we can drop features anytime we want. Remember that blog post? And it was like, wait, okay, so we're going to have one update a year, but you can actually drop features whenever you want. So what's the one update a year even mean? Right,
exactly. That's what I'm saying. Because the first one was the Windows subsystem for Android in the Amazon App Store. They announced this with the Windows 11 launch. It didn't launch with Windows 11. And then it's like, well, yeah, I guess we'll have it later this year. Well, we're not going to say when we're going to have it, actually, but maybe not the next feature. It's like, what? What are you guys even talking about? So that arrived at some point. It comes to the store, and they have web feature experience packs. I don't even know the names of all these feature experience packs.
No one does.
But there's many ways of dropping new features that what is that once a year feature update even there for anymore?
I know. Right. I agree. Okay, so let's play devil's advocate. On the negative side, this takes away predictability, right? So that's the one thing IT loves, predictability. Mm-hmm. It's like suddenly it's like, we knew you could drop features anytime, but now you're saying Zach's story, the moments thing, even that name is so stupid. Moments? Really? Like, come on.
It sounds like...
But that's on brand for Microsoft.
It's like Snapchat stories, but inside of Microsoft. It is a very strange name for it.
No, it's such a PR name, right? Because sometimes I feel like when Microsoft's doing something, they say, they call it a moment. Like, we're having a moment about, you know, AI or whatever. Okay, so anyways, forget this, how weird the name is. But they might have these drops every up to four times a year. Okay, so there will be, Zach's sources say, a new version, whatever that really means. A new, like, does it mean a whole new version where everything is different? Does it mean that just that you're going to have to reboot and you're not going to use an enablement package? We don't really even know what that means, right? And then you're going to have all these other updates dropping willy-nilly. Like, is it going to be every quarter? Maybe. Or is it going to be like three of them, like back to back, and then one at the end of the year? We don't know, right? Like, so on the negative side, I say this takes away predictability. On the positive side, which is what I think, this is stuff Panos and his team care a lot about, it brings excitement back, right? Like, oh, we're going to surprise you guys with new features.
I think also Windows 12 brings excitement back. Just the idea of having a new version of Windows. I mean, as writers who are writing content about this stuff, we see that there is a ton more interest when they have an actual new version of Windows.
Yeah, for sure.
And it is not the same amount of interest for a feature update to Windows. And I'm sure they see that, and they like it when they can get people excited.
Yeah.
How does Microsoft... So one of the things that, you know, I'm always thinking about in terms of different so an example is today Amazon is doing its ALEXA Live event, which is an event for developers, but there's all these announcements of new ways that developers can make use of ALEXA and do a bunch of fun stuff with that. Does Microsoft have events where they announce specifically the new version of software? Is it typically the blog post idea where you go and you see the new features there? Because that schedule of once a year versus every 3 years, that seems like a long time to wait between new versions of Windows. But, you know, I'm not in the Windows camp regularly, so I can understand how that's different.
Well, that's what the moments are going to be for, right? The moments really only exist to sort of keep Windows current when we have major updates coming for other platforms. Windows needs to keep current somehow, especially if there's only one major version every 3 years. So these moments are sort of step in and keep Windows up to date and fresh with new features up to four times a year, as Mary Jo mentioned. That doesn't mean they will do it four times a year. They may only do it twice in 1 year or maybe once in 1 year. I think it will depend on what features they have lined up and ready to go. And it benefits Microsoft internally because, you know, these feature teams who are working on features all throughout the year have often had to wait for the annual release in the fall. If your feature's done in January, that's kind of annoying, isn't it? Because you have to wait for the rest of the year. With these moments, if your feature's done in January, we can say, right, when's the next moment? Oh, it's in February. Cool, we can line this feature up for February. And so these features get out sooner for these product teams as well. And then, of course, they can also start working and do major sort of investments to the platform for these major versions every 3 years, because they now have a longer runway to make meaningful improvements to the OS rather than, you know, in 6 months, oh my God, we have another feature update we've got to do. What do we put in it? And have no time to really actually make anything proper out of that. So there are benefits to it. It will be interesting to see how IT admins are allowed to control the moments aspects, because I think IT admins will be happy with the move to 3 years for major releases. And I'm not too sure how they're going to feel about the moments possibly every few months. Assuming IT admins can control it, I think it'll be a bit better. But if they can't, that might be a problem, right?
Would it be accurate to draw a comparison, really quick, would it be accurate to draw a comparison between Android's Google Play services updates and this moments thing? Is that the idea that instead of tying everything to a release cycle, you
sort
can
like
just do it when
Pixel
it's needed?
Feature drop.
Pixel feature drop. Exactly. That's how it was described to me. It's essentially, look at what Google does with the Pixel. Every month or every couple of months, they will do a feature drop outside of major versions of the Android OS. And, you know, they still get those every year. But there are individual features that show up for Pixel users. And the same can be said for Windows in these moments. Every few months, there'll be a few new features. I doubt there'll be huge changes to the UX and things that you have to relearn. I think these will just sort of include enhancements to the existing product. So things that make whatever you've got better rather than changing things drastically. I could be wrong about that. Who knows what they're planning? But I would be crazy for them to sort of do a Windows 8 style change in a moment, right? No way would they change the UX that drastically. But that's what they could save the major releases for. If they wanted to build hype and a story around a major version of Windows, if they were planning to do any significant UX work that changed things around, they could save that for the major versions every 3 years.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be really good. I think, like Zach said, they'll have a longer runway to put major releases of Windows together. Windows 11, we know it was kind of rushed. It was put together in less than a year. And now that we're seeing a feature update this year, that's really just more of a complete version, and features that were in Windows 10 are coming back. So, being able to plan that every 3 years, I think it's going to be good for everyone.
Well, the one thing we don't know is the support time frame and how that's going to change, right?
Right.
So just because they release a new version of Windows every 3 years, is that going to mean they support versions of Windows for 3 years? Because if it does, IT will love that, right? But what if it isn't that? What if it is, and you have to update to this group of moments in order to remain within support for the next year and a half or whatever. Like, you can see them doing that, right? Like, Microsoft wants people to be on the latest version all the time because they feel like it makes people happier when they have the new features. At least that's what they say, right? So if you're the IT person, you're like, yeah, but how do I, like, make sure people are all on the same version? And some may be on this version or that version. And then you have to figure in how long is it supported and, like, how is that going to work? I just feel like it sounds fun from an announcement perspective, and it makes it more exciting for us as the reporters because we're going to have more to write about. But if you're the people trying to implement this across your company, and especially if you're a big company, I think there are a lot of things that could go wrong.
I bet the board ends up being
a show.
Is this though? Windows or Microsoft, rather? There we go through all the names. Is this Microsoft's way of doing what you have been, which was odd coming from you, Mary Jo? But I remember you asking at the end of the year about how Microsoft was looking to be more for consumers at the time. And you asked, you know, what in this past year showed that you were focusing on that. Is this one of those things? Because as you said, it doesn't seem like it's very focused on the IT folks and the folks who are needing to make sure that this that they can support it. But instead, as a person who's not in that, who just has my Elvis laptop that I like to get new features on from time to time, as a seeker, yes. This is exciting. I'm looking forward to all of these. And I think that the Microsoft or the Windows fans out there, of which there are many, will be excited about this. Is this a consumer facing change to the schedule more so than a company change?
I say yes, for sure. Mm-hmm. It is. And, you know, when Panos took over Windows Client, Panos cares about Apple. That's who Panos cares about, right? So, to be very blunt. And he wants anything that Apple's doing. Like, if Apple's updating their new OS to version 12 or version 13, he wants to be right there, right? He thinks about things from a consumer perspective, for sure. You know, the older guard at Microsoft that's not here anymore, some of them were very much more attuned to the needs of IT pros and businesses because that's Microsoft's bread and butter. And if you really care about that group of people, like what you're proposing here, it sounds like a nightmare to me. I don't know. I understand the excitement part and, like, you know, cool, we get new features and look at this. This is really nice. But if you're somebody rolling things out through rings or trying to make it so that you don't have to retrain your employees on stuff, like, this probably sets off a lot of alarm bells for you.
I think it will depend on the kind of features they plan to roll out through these moments, right? Because, you know, they sort of tested this with the weather button rolling out to Windows 11 earlier this year. Back in February, they announced that, hey, we're going to roll out weather button. There it is. It's on the taskbar now. And that wasn't part of the initial Windows 11 launch. And that wasn't part of version 22H2. That was just rolled out in a servicing style update for existing Windows 11 users. And that that I don't think really maybe interrupted people's workflows or how they use the OS. If it's features sort of like that, then I think maybe IT admins are going to have less of a problem with this. And again, if they can control these and how they roll out, then maybe it won't be so bad. It will come down to if they make a significant change to the start menu, if they shift icons over, if they add something to it, that could be a problem. But would they want to do that in a moment, or would they save that for the major release every 3 years? These are the questions we don't know. And I don't really think Microsoft knows, because I guess it will depend how they're feeling and what feature sort of fits in what product.
And maybe if they ship with the moments features turned off by default, that could calm people down too. Like, okay, if you want to try out this weather widget thing, you have to turn it on, consumer, right?
Yeah. And I guess we can assume that these will sort of show up through these enablement packages, right? They're already testing 22622 with the beta channel, and that's what enables tabs in File Explorer. This is an enablement package. So, you will download 22621, which doesn't have tabs in File Explorer. And then if you want to, air quotes, upgrade to the enablement package, which enables the tabs, then that's how you would go about that. And I assume IT admins can control whether the user gets offered 22622 or if they stay or aren't offered it and have to stay on 22621. I assume maybe that's how it will be controlled.
Mm-hmm. That would be better in terms of IT, right? If that works.
Yeah. Because both of those builds are serviced the same, right? If you look at when they announced the new beta channel builds, the .xxx number is exactly the same. So they're serviced identically. Mm. Just the 22622 build is what turns features on. And so I guess the support lifecycle for both of those would be the same. Who knows? But why would they make them different if they are basically the same build, just one turns things on and one turns things off, right? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, do you guys actually think this is going to be called Windows 12, the next version? And here's why I'm asking you this. I know. So many people, when they read Zach's story last week, the headline was Windows 12 coming in 2024. I'm like, so we have no idea if this is going to be called Windows 12, right?
Right.
I mean, you would guess it could be, and I've heard from people it will be. But then, going back to IT, if you're an IT person, do you want to say, okay, wait, I just got on Windows 11, and here comes Windows 12, right?
This, I think it's going to be Windows Ventura. Windows Monterey.
Hey, somebody else is doing that, aren't they? Although maybe they'll take a cue from Apple. I don't know.
I think it's too early for even Microsoft to know what they're going to call it.
Yeah.
I think it would be a mistake for them to not market it as a new Windows product. Whether that's Windows 12 or something more abstract like Windows Aurora remains to be seen, but I think it would be a mistake for them to just call it Windows 11 2024 edition, because what is the point in waiting 3 years in that case? Just do them every year. You've been doing that for the last 5 years. Why would you have this stopgap suddenly if they're just going to be more Windows 11 updates? So I would like to think that this would be a, air quotes, Windows 12. We don't know if they'll actually use the number 12. It could be something else. But I do think, I am leaning more towards them marketing it as a new Windows product rather than an update to the existing Windows product.
I think Windows 12 makes sense as well. I think, I think they were leaning towards this when they did Windows 11, a new version of Windows, and then support life cycles will have, a support life cycle for Windows 11 and then one for Windows 12. And then that'll just, they'll probably keep it as simple as possible because Microsoft's really good at that.
I saw a few people sort of go, oh, this is just going to be an excuse for them to increase the system requirements again. And, I had a look back at how Windows versions did it in the past. Not every new version of Windows upped the system requirements. I'm pretty sure they stayed the same between Vista and 7. And I think they would stay the same between 7 and 8 as well. Windows 11 was the first version of Windows in a long time to really up those system requirements. And I don't think they're going to do that again for a number of years. So I wouldn't worry about the 2024 release being some, if they require 11th gen chips and ups, that would be a mistake, I think. So I don't think that's going to happen.
The 12, it's funny. Zach put in his story, he heard the code name for the next major version is New Valley NV. I heard the same thing from somebody else. And when I heard the tip about New Valley, I initially was expecting it was going to be just another next feature Valley, update, right? Next Valley. Next Valley. I was thinking that Next Valley code name, originally I was thinking that meant like Windows 11 23 H2. Like I just thought it was going to be like one of those kind of more minor updates, you know?
Yeah, the reason why I didn't think that is because the version 23H2 that was planned was codenamed Sun Valley 3, which makes sense. It's a Windows 11 update. Yeah. Sun Valley, the initial Windows 11 was Sun Valley 1. This year we're getting 22H2, which is Sun Valley 2. Next year would be Sun Valley 3. That makes sense. But with the shift to this new development cycle, I'd also heard that Sun Valley 3 was scrapped, and many of the features mm-hmm. planned for that will now sort of ship in a series of moments throughout 2023. so there's no major release of the Windows client next year, and then that leaves them time to sort of develop for the 2024 release, which may or may not be Windows 12. And it being codenamed Next Valley, you know, I'm not entirely sure if Next Valley is the actual codename. I think there might be a different codename for it specifically. Next Valley was just what I essentially like VNext, like a lot of people refer to things as VNext. Next Valley is sort of that as well. Next Valley sort of stood out to me because if this was just going to be another Windows 11 update, why not codename it Sun Valley 4? Why would they go to the effort of saying Next Valley? That implies beyond Windows 11, right? So I think that sort of adds fuel to the fire regarding it being a Windows 12. You know, but I think it would be a mistake for them to not have this as a new Windows product, right? What would be the point otherwise?
I don't know. I'm not liking change. I'm not a big fan of change. And we've had so much change.
I like it.
We've had so many changes in the way Windows is serviced and how often and the length of support. I'm just like, they can't decide. And they just, the goalposts keep changing. And I'm like, I just figured this out. Now we're going to change it again. Okay.
I've heard from
go ahead, Rich.
I heard from some people on Twitter that they're hoping that this will be a new version of Windows where they roll back the new system requirements of Windows 11. And like, not just one person, like, this is going to be the one where they take away the TPM requirements and everybody on Windows 10 that can't go to Windows 11 is going to be able to go to Windows 12. And I think this is not what's happening.
Yeah. Those people, you know,
everybody is holding out hope that they're going to roll back.
That's not as crazy as it sounds. I don't
really
think. No, because, okay, think about this. Those requirements, like, we don't know what percentage of existing PCs can upgrade to Windows 11. We don't have any. I have never seen a number. Have you guys ever seen one?
No.
But there's probably quite a few that can't, right? And so
probably the majority.
What do you do with these people when 2025 rolls around and there's no more Windows?
You tell them to buy new PCs, Mary Jo. Yeah. It's as simple as that.
No, that's true. I mean, you gotta think when Windows 11 launched, the requirements were 8th gen Intel PCs, Snapdragon 850, Zen 2 AMD, I think. So the oldest PCs that could be upgraded were, or I should say the newest PCs that couldn't be upgraded were like 2018. So, you're still giving them a good 7 years of life out of their PC. And I think the expectation for Microsoft is that you should be upgrading after that or run outdated software.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Are we ready for a break yet?
Have we talked about everything possible that we could say about this? I'm sure we'll think of more things, but yeah, maybe that's good for that topic.
All right. Well, while you ponder on if there's more to say, we'll take a quick break so I can tell you all about SecureWorks, who are bringing you this episode of Windows Weekly. SecureWorks is a subsidiary of Dell. And you have this question: what would happen if an intruder broke into your home and moved in without you knowing it? Sneaking around, eating your food, using your Netflix account. Imagine an intruder doing the same thing to your IT infrastructure. How many passwords could they compromise? How many systems could they damage or degrade? How many pieces of personal or financial data could they steal? It's kind of harrowing. Threat actors often hide in plain sight in IT systems for more than 200 days on average before they are detected. What happens when stopping at the endpoint is stopping your ability to properly defend your infrastructure? Enter SecureWorks Taegis Extended Detection and Response. It enables a more comprehensive and effective security posture than ever before, with one unified singular point of view providing unparalleled visibility. It's also extensible, so following data moving beyond the perimeter and helping organizations unify their prevention, detection, and response is right
built in. It mitigates the issue of siloed security solutions that leave coverage gaps for the adversary to leverage. By organizing multiple point solutions and creating one unified and clear picture of your infrastructure, Taegis XDR can help teams prevent threats effectively, detect them rapidly, and respond appropriately. And SecureWorks meets customers where they are with the managed XDR. You'll get a SaaS solution that can leverage the SecureWorks experts 24/7, 365 to investigate and respond to threats on your behalf. So that way you can cut dwell times, you can decrease operational burden and reduce cost. Some customers have a large security team and can manage XDR by themselves with minimal contact with the experts. But in most cases, companies have a shortage of security talent and they need the help of SecureWorks to help manage and monitor any potential threats to their environment. SecureWorks offers a purpose-built XDR solution designed to answer today's evolving security challenges, optimized by machine learning and deep detection capabilities, but refined through human intelligence and insights earned over decades of experience. A Gartner, Forrester, and IDC leader in security operations, SecureWorks empowers organizations with the collaborative and innovative security solutions required to achieve strong security in an evolving digital world. At SecureWorks.com, you can learn more about the ways today's threat environment is evolving and the risks it can present to your organization, including case studies, reports from their counter-threat unit, and more. Visit SecureWorks.com. SecureWorks. Be the threat. Beat the threat. Thanks so much to SecureWorks for sponsoring this week's episode of Windows Weekly. All right, it's time to get back into things. Do we want to say any more about Windows 12 or 11 or 11.5 or Windows Vista 2.0 or Ventura? Or would you like to talk about the Surface Duo?
I think the Duo, but I'm just putting in for the new name to be Windows 11X, since we were supposed to have Windows 10X. It's like, use the 11X name. Why not?
I'm pretty sure the X is now something Microsoft will never touch again when it comes to Windows versions.
Yeah. I'm just going to say no for that.
You're just going to say that.
No.
The next story is our opportunity to make fun of Zach. There's always opportunities for that.
We love those.
Yay.
Zach is like a real sleuth when it comes to this stuff. He saw on eBay somebody was selling a Surface Duo that didn't look exactly familiar. And so he tracked it down, and I'm going to let him tell you what he found because it's kind of weird and crazy.
I found on eBay. Unfortunately, I didn't buy it. You know, not that I would, it's stolen goods, Microsoft, if you're listening. I would never have bought this. But
never.
On eBay, I came across a weird-looking Surface Duo 2, and the title of the sort of listing was Surface Duo 2 Dev Unit, and I wasn't too sure what this was, so I asked around. By the time I was able to get a sort of concrete answer as to what this was, the listing had sort of been deleted. I think it was sold to whoever bought it. So I had heard that this device was codenamed Kronos and was supposed to ship later this year as a lower cost version of the Surface Duo 2. But it was cancelled late last year. So this thing hasn't been planned for a long time at this point. But it got to a point where it existed and I guess was in self-hosters' hands or testing internally until they decided to cancel it. And it was supposed to be essentially a mid-range Surface Duo 2. It had a plastic exterior compared to the sort of glass exterior that the Surface Duo 2 has. It had one less camera on the back. It had a sort of upper mid-tier Snapdragon 7 series chip, I believe. And instead of it didn't have a glance bar, so the displays on the inside were flat rather than curved down the middle. And it was essentially, you know, everything that they could pare back, they did to sort of hit a lower price bracket. Now, I unfortunately don't know what that price bracket was going to be. You know, a guess could be maybe $800, maybe sub $1,000, I assume is what they were trying to go for. Because if we consider the price of the Duo 2, that was $1,500 at launch, I think. It was very expensive. Yeah. And that was, I think, its number one criticism, right? That the Duo is just too expensive. So I guess they thought, hey, why not try and make a cheaper version? And that's what this device was going to be. Unfortunately, as far as I'm aware, it has been cancelled and they're not going to ship it. The reason I was told it was cancelled is because they decided to just go all in on the Duo 3 flagship, which, as far as I'm aware, is not coming until the end of next year. So we're sort of going Duo-less for a year, unfortunately. But hopefully by the end of next year, they will have a product that is better than what we have currently. Who knows what they're going to do with the Duo 3. But yeah, this Qantas thing is not happening as far as I'm aware.
Okay. I think you know, I wanted to love the Surface Duo.
I did really too. I think we all did.
I know. When I got the first unit, I got one of the first test units. Like, I think 100 people got them. And I put it in my hand, and I'm like, this is amazing. And then I tried to use it, and I was like, and it's totally unusable. Like, you cannot use this. Like, it's horrible. The original one, software experience was terrible. There were lags. There were all kinds of problems. Camera was awful, right? Version 2, I also finally did get a review unit of that, and I tried it a couple times, and I just gave up because I'm like, I don't think they fixed anything. I know you like it, Zach, but that's why we want to make fun of you. Like, why do you like this? Yeah.
Because it's good. I promise. I'm not lying. It is good. Now, yes, this one did launch in a little bit of a buggy state as well, but today I can't fault it. It works as it's supposed to work at this point.
So, Zach, when you say... good, right?
Right. Is it? I know exactly where you're going with this. Yeah.
Have you ever used a Galaxy Z Fold 3? Because
I used a Galaxy Z Fold 1, so I was there. The launch.
Yeah. And because obviously Microsoft has had a lot of partnerships with Samsung. They've had a lot of integrations with Windows and such from Galaxy phones that even the Duo didn't get first, right? Foldable beats dual screen, in my opinion. And I feel like for a Microsoft fan, the Z Fold 3 is the better option than a Duo 2. And I've also still just kind of had general problems with the Duo 2, like touchscreen issues. The camera really needs work, especially in low light. It's way better than Duo 1. I'll give it that because Duo 1 didn't have a rear camera, right?
Yeah.
But I feel like the Z Fold 3. So I like to me, foldables is where it's at rather than dual screen, and a mid-range Duo to me doesn't really make sense because I feel like the product's not there yet. Like going all in on Duo 3 makes a lot more sense to me because they need this thing to mature before they explore other tiers.
I fully agree, and I think Microsoft sort of thought that as well, that the product line at the time when they were developing Qantas just wasn't where it needed to be. And, you know, I'm not saying it's there now, but from now until the end of next year, there's a lot more time for them to improve the software and indeed put together some hardware that is above and beyond what they've done here. Even regarding the dual screen versus foldable screen debate, it comes down to preference, right? Technologically, I think a single screen foldable is better. But it comes down to the experience of the dual screen. Like on the Duo, so with the Galaxy Fold 1, which is the last sort of Galaxy Fold I really used, I never multitasked on it. I just never did. I had that big, you know, whatever it is, 7.6 inch screen, and I never would you see me running two apps side by side on that device. And I think that's because Samsung just did a poor job at implementing multitasking on top of Android for the Galaxy Fold. You know, it's a very manual process. You have to swipe out the side drawer, then you have to drag an app to the one side you want to sort of open it on, and it's a process. On the Duo, it's automatic. You tap an app on one screen and you tap an app on the other screen, and they're just running side by side. It's not something you have to think about. If you're in one app and you tap on a link, it will just open on the other screen. The Galaxy Fold never does stuff like that. And I think that's
they made
the multitasking seamless. Like, you don't think about the fact that you're multitasking on the Duo, but you're doing it all the time. And on the Galaxy Fold, that just wasn't the case. Now, do you value multitasking on your phone? That's, you know, that's the question you need to ask for whether or not this device makes sense.
Right.
And, you know, for a lot of people, it doesn't.
Have you written on there? Have you done any work on that device, or is it
I have written, not not long articles, but I've certainly given it a go. I wouldn't prefer to write articles on this, but you can do it if you really wanted to. I didn't use the laptop mode, if that's what you're asking. The compose mode on this thing isn't great. And, you know, I'll be totally honest with that. But being able to sort of span one app across both screens and type with two screens is actually really nice. And because of the screens are slightly wider. Yeah,
but the hinge makes you more creative. Don't you remember the...
I remember.
That's what Panos said. It's scientifically proven.
It actually adds creativity, yeah.
Yeah, but see, the thing about spanning two...
Go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
All right. But the thing about spanning two different screens is that with certain apps, it doesn't work. Whereas with a larger full screen, like if I'm reading... I mean, they have a good Kindle app, but say if I'm reading comic books on it or something, there's just a split in the middle of the page. Or if you're watching a movie on Netflix or something, it's just a split. And if you're really looking for that multitasking experience, it can do it. But I'm not sure how popular of a use case that is compared to other things or the compromises that you make.
Well, in that case, what you do is you just fold one of the screens around and it's just a normal phone at that point,
and
right?
The
spanning capabilities. Yeah. Well, it's still it's not a tiny screen. I haven't complained about this screen ever. It's perfectly sized. What I will say is, you know, the spanning capability, I think Microsoft advertised it wrong. It's a bonus. It's not a core part of the experience because most apps don't support it. You're totally right about that. Some apps will accidentally support it sometimes. And obviously most of Microsoft's apps support it, but a lot of apps just don't. And in that case, you just wouldn't span them. You'd just use it on one screen, or you'd be using two apps side by side, or you'd fold one of the screens around and use it as a single screen phone. And yeah, I totally get the criticism of, yeah, but I bought a phone with 8 inches of total screen real estate. I want to use all of it at once. And in that case, yeah, this device isn't going to be for you. It's for people who sort of prefer running two apps side by side, or if they're not using a single screen phone, because that's what being able to fold all the way around does for you. And then in the rare circumstance where it works, being able to span an app gives you that both screens using in one app, and it looks great and it feels great. But yeah, it's for the most part not a phone where you would be spanning those two apps across both screens, because you just wouldn't want to do that. I know some people say that they watch videos across both screens. I think they're insane. I've never done that.
The thing that surprises me the most about the Duo is that Microsoft is still backing it and still investing in it.
Yeah,
I think Microsoft wants to have a successful phone business, and they're doing it right now with the Duo 2. Who's to say that they won't expand in the future to other form factors running Android that also fit in your pocket? Mm-hmm. I'm, of course, hinting at maybe a single screen phone or a Galaxy Fold type device. I would not be surprised if they have prototypes, things like that internally. I think Microsoft genuinely wants to have a successful, I don't know how successful, or have a phone business of some kind, because they're all in on Android, right? You know, their recent reorg, they created a new Microsoft Android sort of group internally, which houses the Duo OS, it houses SwiftKey, Microsoft Launcher, all of their Android app efforts sort of under one organization. And I think what they want is to do what they did with Windows and Surface, but with Android. They want to just have an Android device that showcases the best of all of their software on an open platform, which is Android. And how better else to do that than with phones? Because that's what Android is good at.
Partner with Samsung.
Yeah.
Samsung won't set the launcher as default and have Edge as the default browser. Right? That's the key thing there. I know that there are partnerships with Samsung, and you have OneDrive doing backups for, I think, Samsung Photos and stuff. And there are some pre-installed apps from Microsoft. And obviously the integration with PhoneLink, but you don't get that Microsoft Launcher default sort of experience. You don't get Edge as default and all of that stuff, which I think is what Microsoft really wants at the forefront of a device. And Samsung will, I don't think, ever let Microsoft do that.
Yeah.
So 2023 then. You're saying October 2023, late 2023 is when
you should expect. Late 2023. I don't know an exact time frame yet. And obviously that could be pushed back. We have no idea. Yeah, it's usually October, you're right. But we you know, as of right now, I think they're targeting late 2023. That could be pushed back if the component shortage doesn't improve and they're not ready to sort of ship something yet. But as of right now, they are targeting the end of next year. And I guess we'll see what that turns out to be like.
That is a little disappointing. Like if they're trying to compete in the phone space, like you said, that they can't keep up a phone with flagship hardware like their competitors are doing.
I don't know. I would.
Gen 1 was a generation behind. Right.
Gen 2 is now behind because it's almost a year old. I will say, I wouldn't be surprised if the next Duo is radically different. They always say, they try three times. Every third generation of a Surface product is usually the perfected one, right? Where the Pro 3, and I think that was the only one that actually really did that. But
Laptop 3 did it.
Laptop 3
didn't look different, but the weight balance was totally different. They totally redesigned
that
product
was the
15
inch one. Yeah, you're right. I would not be shocked if the Duo 3 is radically different. I would not even be surprised if they go single screen foldable for the Duo 3 and just have the dual screen and nature of it be through software.
So, Zach, let me ask you a question.
Better.
Let me ask you a question that's not in the show notes. What about the Studio 3?
Oh no! What about the studio?
I heard a report from my friend Zach Bowden that at this year's event we may see a Surface Studio 3.
Yeah, it is possible. No, they've been.
We should. What are they going to announce this year in the fall for Surface? We should like get you guys to speculate because Paul and I speculated, but we're not as close to it as you guys are. So
what do you think's coming?
Well, I know Surface Pro X and Surface Pro 9 are coming. Obviously, yep. Surface Pro X with an SQ3, which is a rebranded Snapdragon 8cx Gen 3. Volterra should be coming in October. They had said summer, but now I'm hearing that they're saving that for the Surface launch event. Pro 9's coming, 12th Gen Intel. And then I guess Surface Laptop, which I had only heard from Zach, but makes perfect sense with 12th Gen Intel and Ryzen 6000, which makes a lot of sense because that means like the last 2 years we've seen Surface Laptop in the spring, they've stayed a generation behind with Ryzen. And so now I guess they're going to catch up, and that makes a lot of sense because they're adding Thunderbolt now, which they did with Surface Pro 8 and Laptop Studio finally. So now if they use Ryzen 6000, they could pair that with USB 4. So there doesn't have to be such a disparity between the Intel model and the AMD model. But Zach, what can you add to that? Because Zach's the Surface expert. I don't know why he said, Rich, take that.
Well, I want to hear what you thought first. Regardless.
So you can tell me why I'm wrong.
No, I think honestly, you mostly got most of that right. The Studio 3 is an interesting one because I heard that they wanted to ship a Studio 3 in 2020, but then the pandemic happened and I think they decided not to do that. So they've been sitting on whatever the Studio 3 is for a little while. I would hope they've updated it since then, but as the last I heard, they're planning. Yeah, I don't know about a redesign, but I understand that they are kind of hoping to get it out later this year. So I assume it will be announced in October alongside all these other products. Whatever's new with it, I don't know. The last I heard, it had an 11th gen chip in it, which I'm hoping they've updated since because, we're on 12th gen now and coming up to 13th gen. I would hope they've updated that. But yeah, regarding the design or any new features, I have no idea. And then the last thing I heard might show up this fall is Surface Earbuds 2. I don't know what's new with them, so don't ask me. But that's also apparently a contender for this fall.
What about the Surface monitor? Guys, what about the Surface monitor? Where is that thing? Is it ever going to show up?
They had confirmed that for Hub, right?
Say it again.
What is the Surface monitor?
They were supposed to use Surface technology to build a standalone monitor with no CPU unit because a lot of people wanted the Surface screen. But they didn't necessarily want to have another computer. And they actually said they were going to do it, right? What year was that? 2019, maybe?
For Studio?
Did they confirm that for Studio?
For Hub.
That was the Surface Hub 2 display, yeah. Right? That's
right.
Yeah, that was the 50.
Because they had the modular compute unit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Right. So essentially what they were going to do is take out that compute unit and just sell you the screen, right. I assume.
Yeah. And they were also supposed to have multiple versions.
Exactly. There was supposed to be the 2X, which also never came. The 2S, you know, if you go back and watch that initial Surface Hub 2 sort of unveiling video, that's all fake. Everything they announced in that unveiling video never shipped. Literally none of it.
Yeah.
Now, I should tell you guys a funny story because I was in the room with Zach when this happened. So they let us go on an NDA tour, right? And I can talk about it now because the NDA is over. But like they were letting us see what was going to be happening was the Surface Hub 2 and the 2X, right? So they had a mock-up unit, and Zach is in there, like in the group I'm in, behind the unit, trying to like see if the thing will come off the unit and stuff. And they're like, "What are you, dude? What are you doing?" And he's like, "Can I just look at this?" And they're like, "No."
Oh my god, that's amazing! I wish I was there.
It was hands-on. I had hands-on. That's all I was doing.
Yeah, you had hands-on. All right, you had hands-on.
That was when. He was trying to
see the operating system version on it too, like somehow bring it up.
That's because it was a Windows Core thing and they weren't talking about it yet. And I did ask them, I was like, "Is this Windows Core OS?" And they're like, "We're not talking about that." I'm like, "But it's right in front of me. Why not?"
I could see I remember someone
someone at that briefing had brought a prototype Surface that no one on this call would No one on this podcast would purchase because it's stolen property. But someone may have brought a Surface Mini to that briefing.
Oh.
It wasn't me. I wonder who you're hinting at.
No, definitely wasn't Zach is what we're saying.
Oh. Oh. Microsoft, I don't have it anymore, so please don't call me. Thank you.
See what we do in the name of journalism, people? This is our job.
Yes.
Got to do what you got to do.
You do.
One more thing regarding the fall event, I guess, is the other thing that I heard might be happening, and I don't know if this is for a fact yet, is they may merge the Pro X and the Pro 9, I guess. I don't know what they're going to call it, under one brand and just have it Surface Pro 9 or Surface Pro 10. Who knows what they'll call it? But instead of having a separate Pro X model for the ARM variant, they will just have it under the normal one. And then when you configure it in the store, it'll be through Intel, or you choose the SQ3, I guess, whatever they call it. I don't know if that's actually going to happen, but that's something I heard may be on the cards. And that would be really interesting if they do that, because it would be a big moment for Windows on ARM, where Microsoft is essentially going, this is no longer special. This is just... Yeah. This is no Windows on ARM is no longer special. This is just part of the Surface Pro line, and you can configure it with ARM or configure it with Intel.
I don't think that's happening this year, though. I think it might be next year.
It might not be this year, but I just heard it was something they were thinking about.
Yeah. Also, I think I have a theory on why, though, because I do think that Panos can, like, because I mentioned Ryzen 6000 and Intel 12th Gen and USB 4 and Thunderbolt, and the new Surface Pro X, I believe, will still be USB 3.2, while the Pro 9 is going to have Thunderbolt. And I do think they care about that kind of disparity between the product and trying to say this thing is the same, but not.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's probably fair to say then it's a goal for them to merge them, because they would like to.
I think it's happening next year.
It's just an addition rather than a special thing that has to be treated differently because it's worse or different in many different ways. And, you know, we've seen lots of focus on Windows and ARM recently as well. You know, Build was a big event for Windows and ARM. They were now, you know, the whole the developer tool chain is now ARM native. Yep. Project Volterra, which sort of
full
came out of
Visual
nowhere.
Studio. That's a
full Visual Studio, exactly. And then Volterra, which is a sort of Mac Mini, but for Windows, running ARM stuff. You know, all of that sort of appeared out of nowhere, and it was a sudden push forward for Windows and ARM. And I think this is in preparation, of course, for the Nuvia stuff, which is supposed to be launching towards the end of next year, right? And I guess we won't see that in a Surface Pro X until 2024. Hopefully you'd see it at the end of next year, but I guess we'll have to wait and see.
All right, that's a great segue to get Rich to speculate on the Qualcomm Tech Summit. It's Qualcomm Tech Summit coming in Hawaii in November. I bet you're going in person, are you?
I am going in person, of course.
Of course.
So I can speculate of what we'll see at Snapdragon Summit this year. I think we could see as many as four new Windows on ARM chipsets, because right now we have the 7C, 8C, and 8CX. That's the existing lineup from Qualcomm. 7C is very popular at the low end. It's in some budget Windows laptops, and it's also in a bunch of Chromebooks, so that is a high priority for Qualcomm. We might see 8CX Gen 4. 8C hasn't been refreshed since the beginning. It's been in very few products, but I understand that it's not done. Like, they're not killing it, so that's going to be refreshed at some point, whether that's this year or not. And then 8CX Gen 4 would be a successor to, you know, Gen 3, and then we might see Nuvia. Because the Nuvia chip, like, obviously, for those who don't know, Qualcomm bought this company called Nuvia, and it's supposed to help them build their own custom ARM chips, sort of like what Apple is doing. And right now, they're using ARM designs, and what they will be able to do is just use the ARM instruction set. So rather than having to wait for ARM to put out new designs and build new processors based on those, they would have the full stack of processor development, like Intel and Apple do already. So that's been sampling to OEMs starting second half of this year. So second half just started, should be sampling to OEMs soon. They could announce that chip at Snapdragon Summit. I don't know what it will be called. I don't think it's going to be 8CX.
Maybe 9CX?
Yeah, so Qualcomm has made a really big...
12.
12, yeah. Qualcomm has made a really big deal about saying that 8 is their top-of-the-line product. 8 means premium. That's why they had the 888, and now it's just 8 Gen 1 for mobile. For PC, it's 8C. C means compute, and then 8CX. X means extreme. But from what I believe that 8CX Gen 4 and the Nuvia chip will... exists in parallel to each other, and it's not like the Nuvia chip is just going to be the next 8CX. I think it's going to be a new line of chips from them.
Is that because the Nuvia chips are predicted to be quite expensive, probably more so than the Gen 4 chips?
Mm. No, I think it's just another tier. I think like they've always said that 8CX was an i5 competitor. And I think right. In the beginning, it was like a 7th gen i5 that they were comparing it to. And now they probably compare it to like an 11th gen or something. So this would be more along the lines of like an i7 or an i9 competitor. And hopefully, like, I don't know if they're aiming for the MacBook Pro, like an M1 Pro or an M1 Max just yet. But I know that's definitely where they want to go at some point. And the Nuvia chip is supposed to take them there.
Do we think that, assuming that these Nuvia chips can match Apple, do we think Microsoft will start putting them in more surfaces? Because right now it is literally only the Pro X that has an ARM chip. Every other Surface, as far as I'm aware, other than the Duo, every other Surface PC is Intel or AMD. Could we see Microsoft put a Nuvia chip in the Surface laptop or a Surface Go? Or maybe not Nuvia chip in the Surface Go, but do you think maybe ARM will expand throughout the Surface line more as we sort of get better and better chips that can compete with what Apple is doing on the M1 or M2, M3 side of things?
It totally could happen. Any of this stuff could happen eventually, right? Because anytime I look at the market when it comes to ARM, ARM is winning and Apple's doing great with their hardware. And it's not just the performance, because in a lot of use cases, Intel totally matches, if not exceeds, the performance that Apple's offering. But the fact that they could put something like an M1 Ultra in a product that's, you know, like 8 inches square and then like 5 inches tall or something, that's crazy. On Windows with an Intel chip, we would need a 125 watt CPU and a giant graphics card to do something like that. Intel plans on being in the lead in performance per watt by 2025, or at least that's what they're promising right now. So if they can do that, that's kind of the question. But if they can somehow catch up to what's being done on the ARM side, absolutely this stuff is going to show up in more products.
Yeah. You know, I think we have to thank Apple for making really great
legitimizing
chips that everybody wants to beat. Because all of these companies are now striving to beat it. And as a result, we're going to get better Windows pieces as a result. So thanks, Apple.
By the way, Qualcomm was the first to thank Apple for this. You know, when they announced their own silicon for Macs, Qualcomm came right out there and like, this, we think this is great because it's going to push more developers to develop for ARM and it legitimizes, you know, ARM PCs, and it's great for everyone.
Yeah. Well,
I love the competition.
Yeah. Well, Rich is the one, for people who remember this from a year ago, that he reported that Qualcomm and Microsoft had an exclusive deal, and that this may have something to do with the fact that Microsoft still won't officially support Windows on Apple silicon. Right. That deal is supposed to be ending, right? Unless there's been an extension to it. And what do you know, Rich? Know anything?
So here's the thing. I don't have an update on when that deal is ending. But at the time,
well, you're going to Hawaii for a reason, right? Like, so this is your
Yeah, but that's the thing. Qualcomm's not going to. The thing is, Microsoft and Qualcomm officially won't acknowledge that this deal exists. But there are now other companies like MediaTek that have said that they will make a Windows on ARM chip once they are allowed to. So I would keep my eye more on MediaTek Summit, which is the week before Qualcomm's event in November. That's going to be held in California. Mm. And I'll be there as well.
Of course you will. Mr. Chips, he'll be there.
Do we know why this exclusivity deal even exists? Like, where is the benefit for the ecosystem? Because unless, you know, does MediaTek have chips that would benefit Windows PCs, or is it really only Qualcomm? And are we not missing out with this exclusivity deal?
We're not missing out right now. Cause like I said, the way that Qualcomm develops their chips, it's just ARM announces an architecture that they announce, you know, the chips that Qualcomm is going to use. Like, they show this stuff off a year ahead of time, and then Qualcomm announces the actual chip that uses the cores that ARM announced. So MediaTek could just make the same chip, essentially. Yeah. The reason that the exclusivity deal is in place, I mean, it's pretty straightforward because there was nothing to gain for Qualcomm in supporting PCs to begin with back in 2016 when they announced this. And when they said, all right, we're going to work on this together, they said, what do we get? And they said, all right, so for X amount of years, you're going to be the only one that makes ARM chips for Windows PCs. I think the first we'll hear about it ending will be from MediaTek. Microsoft will probably never announce that there was was a deal. I would expect that once that happens, you know, we'll see Windows on ARM open up to MacBooks, and then hopefully Apple would support Bootcamp, which would be awesome. But like, once you realize there's an exclusivity deal, all the limitations around Windows on ARM suddenly make sense.
Didn't Microsoft say at Build that sometime this summer they would have more to say about licensing Windows on Apple Silicon? I think they actually said that publicly, right?
Did they?
Yeah,
I
forget who sent us the link. It might have been Taro, our friend Taro Alhonen, who found it. Mm. But somebody said that at Build, like, this summer we're going to have more to say. Okay, so we're running out of summer. Let's see when we're going to say it.
I mean, so what is the other than the fact that it's not allowed by Microsoft? Are there any technical limitations for running Windows on ARM on a Mac right now? Like, so there's no boot camp. So I guess you're running it through VMware. I guess is how people are doing
there's
it.
There's no
right?
ISO, right? There's no ISO parallels. For the thing, right?
Yeah. So no, what are people using to install on Parallels?
Well, they have a VHDX file that you can use to make a VM.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. And then I guess it's just not allowed on a Mac, but it's fine on legitimate Windows and ARM PCs.
Yeah, it's not supported. Yeah. That's the key, right? Like, so people can do it, but if you're a business and if anything goes wrong, you're out of luck. Like, Microsoft will just say, yeah, we didn't say you could do that. Yeah. So.
And even those VHDX files were originally made when they were releasing Hyper-V for Windows on ARM PCs. So they're supposed to be run on Qualcomm PCs too. So... I don't know. That's it. There's nothing technically keeping Windows on ARM from running on. I think some people have gotten in the early days of M1, people got Windows on ARM to run natively on some MacBooks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Well, have fun in Hawaii and let us know.
Shall we take another quick break?
Sure.
And now it's time to tell you about this week's sponsor of Windows Weekly. It's ClickUp. So imagine this, having one extra day every week, one extra day, more time to cook healthy meals, to work on that novel you might be working on, maybe to binge some good TV. When I think about what I would do with an extra day each week, it would probably be sleep for that whole day, which would be very nice. It's all possible with ClickUp, the productivity platform that's going to save you one day a week on work, guaranteed. ClickUp began with the premise that productivity was broken. There were too many tools to keep track of, too many things in entirely separate ecosystems. There had to be a more productive way to get through the daily hustle. ClickUp is the one tool to house all your tasks, your projects, your docs, your goals, your spreadsheets, and everything else that you're working on. ClickUp is built for teams from 1 to 1,000 or more. It's packed with features and customization options that no other productivity tool has, so you can work the way you work best. Whether you're in project management, engineering, sales, marketing, HR, ClickUp has easy-to-use solutions that create a more efficient work environment. Join the more than 800,000 highly productive teams using ClickUp today. Use the code WINDOWS to get 15% off ClickUp's massive unlimited plan for a year, meaning you can start reclaiming your time for under $5 a month. Sign up today at clickup.com and use that code WINDOWS. And do hurry.
because that offer ends very soon. ClickUp.com and use the offer code Windows. Thank you so much to ClickUp for sponsoring this week's episode of Windows Weekly. All right, Mary Jo, what's next on the list?
Yeah, so I'm excited we get to dig in a little more about the Microsoft Netflix partnership that was announced. It was announced during Windows Weekly last week, and we didn't really have a chance to look into it that deeply at that point. But I'm dying to hear what Zach and Rich think about where this could go in the future. So first, let me give you a quick outline of what it's about. So Netflix has been known to be developing an ad-supported, less expensive streaming service. They've publicly said that they plan to do that. They announced last week that they've chosen Microsoft to be their exclusive ad partner for this partnership. So that means Bing and MSN and all those things we lament on the show regularly will be part of this subscription. Microsoft acquired a company at the end of 2021 from AT&T called Xandr, X-A-N-D-R. And that gives them a lot of play around connected TV and the whole tech platform for premium advertising for TV. And supposedly this is going to be a big piece of what they do with Netflix. Okay, so we knew that right around last Thursday. Then there was an analyst, I forget who this was, but a security analyst who came out and said, well, you know what's really going on here. This is just Microsoft setting itself up to buy Netflix. And Netflix is going to be out there shopping itself around, and Microsoft's just sitting there waiting. And it's a great fit because Microsoft's all into subscription services. And yeah, why not buy Netflix, right? Makes sense. When I heard this, I'm like, makes sense. This makes no sense. I'm like, what? Like Microsoft buying Netflix? And then I thought to myself, oh, wait, this is the company that almost bought TikTok. And way back when, they almost bought Yahoo, right? So something doesn't have to make sense for Microsoft to do it. It can still happen, even if it makes no sense. So what do you guys
think? In fact, it's more likely to happen if it doesn't make sense.
It kind of is, right? So what do you guys think? Is there any way this would make sense? You know, I think Jez over on Windows Central made a case. Well, it fits in with what they're doing with gaming, right?
And I was going to say game streaming tech, I think, is the only.
Right.
Because Netflix is really good at streaming at scale, right? Yeah. So maybe if they have some kind of streaming tech that could help with game streaming. Because, I mean, it's not about entertainment streaming, like movies and TV. I mean, movies and TV is clearly not a priority for Microsoft in any meaningful way. Like there have been leaks and rumors of an Xbox dongle and stuff, but even that's about gaming. But the movies and TV, like that's not even cross-platform. So it's definitely not about that. But yeah, all I could see is game streaming tech if they have it. Zach, what do you think? Does it make sense?
I don't know, but isn't Netflix like struggling a little bit right now? I've seen headlines where they're losing subscribers, and I don't know if they're making money still or what the situation is, but they're not in a great place versus, you know, a year or two ago. Would it make sense for Microsoft to buy a company that's seemingly struggling? Keep in mind, this is an industry, a market that is very competitive. You know, we've got Amazon, we've got Hulu, we've got Apple, loads of big companies are here, you know, doing these streaming services. And not only do they just have to stream content, they have to make their own original content as well. Is Microsoft willing to get into that game where they have to now start making TV shows and movies like Apple does? You know, some of Apple, I have Apple TV, and Apple makes some great shows. And can Microsoft compete in that market? Do they even want to compete in that market? Right. Is another question entirely, because this is a very consumer focused market. And as we all know, Microsoft tries not to dabble in consumer markets as much as it can, or in a lot of areas, at least, other than Xbox. So yeah, the only angle I would say makes sense is for Xbox. But does Xbox want to dive back into movies and TV? Because if you remember, they tried that with the Xbox One, and it failed spectacularly. Gamers rejected it. You know, I don't think any TV show other than Halo got off the ground, and that took almost a decade. So I just don't think Microsoft wants to get into the home entertainment sort of TV/movies market, because it's very competitive.
Yeah. Do you remember when Xbox was going to be the brand for all things entertainment?
Yeah.
We had Xbox Video and Xbox Music. Mm-hmm. And obviously all those things are gone now. They could, if they really wanted to get into making TV shows, like there's nothing stopping them. That like they do it with games, but I don't think there's any world where it makes sense to do.
Yeah, I don't think they'll ever use the Xbox brand for that again, because I think Xbox suffered significantly when they tried to make Xbox an all-encompassing thing.
Oh, yeah.
And their core audience, that being gamers, just simply rejected it, which is why the Xbox One did so poorly and is why Microsoft to this day are still sort of fighting, you know, Sony still took over the PlayStation. And yeah, they're still recovering because of that focus. They lost focus. You know, gaming was just a part of a bigger vision and it all fell apart for them. So I would be shocked if Xbox went, let's do movies and TV again, because the last time they tried that, it didn't go well.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, I saw people saying, yeah, it's just a short hop from like having studios that create games to having studios that create TV shows. I'm like, no, I don't think that's a short hop. I don't know, because I'm not in that field, but it seems pretty different to me. Mm. Like a different skill set, a different group of people who would be undertaking that. And sure, they could farm that out, right? They could just say, okay, we'll have our own exclusive content, but we'll hire TV studios to do it and we'll work with them as partners. They could do that, but I don't know. I know they want to look more and more consumer friendly and have products and services that attract consumers and not just businesses. But this to me just feels like, ooh, that could be such a big money pit if they decide to do this.
Yeah. Especially since Netflix is apparently not doing too well. Like what can Microsoft bring to the table to right the ship and bring them back on track? Can they bring anything? I don't think so. Somebody on the Xbox team might have an idea or two, but I don't think Microsoft's the company to buy Netflix if they need to be bought.
Yeah.
No, I think this is just about ads. I think that's it.
Yeah. And what would Microsoft gain buying them? Are they still going to make money through this partnership? I assume they will. Otherwise, why would they agree to the partnership? They don't get the baggage and they still get to make money. And I think that's probably the best for Microsoft.
Yep. Agree. All right. We took care of that analyst who said that. She was crazy. Our work is done here. Yeah, so we didn't talk yet about the big thing that happened this week, which is Microsoft's annual partner show, Inspire.
There was a Microsoft show?
There was. Yeah, it was virtual. It was virtual, sadly, so yeah.
Were there any announcements?
Were there?
There were. There were. A few that you guys maybe even wrote about or heard about, at least. You know what's funny? They still haven't really talked a whole lot about what they're doing with Fluid and how they're working on an app to compete with Notion called Fluid. They showed this like over a year ago and they haven't really said anything since. But what they are doing is talking about how some of the existing Office apps inside Teams are using Fluid framework technology to finally actually do real-time collaboration. So they announced this thing called Excel Live at Inspire this week. And Excel Live is going to be super exciting to people who care about Excel. We know you are among our listeners on Windows Weekly because we hear from you. Excel Live is going to let people who are working together in Teams work simultaneously on Excel notebooks. So right now, like Microsoft has real-time authoring collaboration sort of in these Office apps. As Paula and I know, from OneNote, it doesn't always work the best. That's why we moved to Notion. But Excel Live is going to let people, like say you have a Teams chat and there's a bunch of people talking about an Excel spreadsheet or an Excel notebook. They can all work on it together at the same time. So people who are into Excel are like, this is going to be amazing. This was the missing piece of Excel. And I think this is going to be astounding. So yeah, that's one of the announcements. That was a pretty good one. Most confusing announcement award goes to Viva Engage. So Viva is Microsoft's employee experience platform. You know, they have Viva Topics, Viva Learn, Viva Insights. There are all these modules, and it's basically been a platform to help you onboard new employees as a company. Like when someone joins your company, either virtually or in person, you can kind of set them up on Viva and say, here's all the things you need to learn about our company and communications coming to you from corporate. You have Viva Goals. You have all these modules that are meant to help you succeed as an employee.
I so still hold that Viva is really cool. I think that was a...
You liked it. I remember. You really were into Viva. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this week, they announced a thing called Viva Engage, which is based on Yammer, which is a social media platform that Microsoft owns. So if you go back and you look at the headlines that came out about this week, a lot of people had never seen Yammer before. And when they saw Viva Engage, they saw Facebook. Like, they're like, oh, Microsoft's ripping off Facebook, right? Like,
yes, I saw
Microsoft,
these headlines.
They're copying Facebook. It's like, no, guys, they have a product called Yammer. They do these things called Yam Jams, not even making that up. That's a real thing they talk about at Microsoft.
I just imagine someone holding up a jar
this on top of Yammer, and it's meant to let people use things like storylines, stories, this new video clip technology that lets you make short videos and embed them in posts so that you can talk to your colleagues and exchange information and get to know them. Okay.
Using Clip Champ.
The reason this was so confusing is Microsoft already has this app. It's called Teams Communities. And so what they're doing is they're rebranding Teams Communities as Engage. And they're going to use that technology inside Viva. But at the same time, they're keeping Yammer around. They're not killing the brand. So the official Microsoft term for this is hybrid branding. I'm also not making that up. It means you are giving a product a new name, but you're not killing the old name completely, so that you're having both these things go on at the same time. It's hybrid, like cool hybrid, right? Yay.
That's so confusing.
Yeah. The write-ups of this were pretty all over the map. And I think Microsoft has a lot more explaining to do on this and has to clarify a lot of things about this for people to get it. One more announcement from Inspire that you guys may or may not care about, but Enterprise will care about this. So Microsoft is creating a digital contact center. And the way they're doing this is they're taking a bunch of products they already have and mushing them together. That's the official term, mushing them together. They're taking Teams, Dynamics 365, Power Platform, and then Nuance. You know, they just bought this company called Nuance for $19.7 billion. Nuance is mostly a healthcare company, but they have a lot of AI technology too. And they have their own contact center at Nuance. So Microsoft is taking all these different piece parts. They're bringing them together and creating a contact center. So this is for people, you know, in sales who have to talk to people all day on their headsets. You know, they need to track information about their clients, see where the opportunities are, know things like when was the last time I called this person. So this unified contact center will do all of this for you. So they're actually going to start selling this kind of as a disparate pieces loosely joined, and over time kind of make it more of a true unified offering.
How does Nuance play into it?
So Nuance has AI technology that is going to be part of this. It does things like sentiment analysis. So when you're talking to somebody on the phone and they sound really mad, it'll be like, yeah, the person you're talking to isn't really liking the pitch you're making right now. Maybe you want to switch that up a little. Yeah. So that's one of the things it does. They call Nuance's AI technology is secure AI infused contact center technology. That's a mouthful, but yeah, that's one of the things they have and what they do. So there are a lot of other announcements at the partner show every year. There's like lots of new partner programs. I'm going to talk in my pick of the week a little bit more about one other thing, and I'll talk a bit more about where they're going with vertical stuff at Microsoft. But yeah, that's in a nutshell. If I was going to tell you what was cool at Inspire, those are the three main things I would say. But there was some non-Inspire news, too, that these guys wanted me to make sure we talked about, having to do with Discord and Xbox. I was trying to avoid talking about Xbox on the show today, but I guess we're not going to be able to totally avoid it. So either of you can
Mary
take it
jo,
away.
You and I can sit back while they talk about
it. We can. We can.
This isn't really a huge announcement, but earlier today, Xbox and Discord announced Discord voice chat integration directly on Xbox. So now if you have a Discord account, you can link that up to your Xbox and chat with people on Discord using your Xbox headset plugged into an Xbox in your living room. And that's a huge thing I think lots of gamers have been asking for a long time. And it is interesting because wasn't Microsoft rumored to be in talks to buy Discord at one point? That obviously fell through and never happened. But I wonder if this was sort of always planned, or if this sort of came to be after that conversation happened, and although it fell through, maybe they were like, hey, let's keep in contact, and now this is what's happened, who knows. But yeah, the Xbox and Discord are now integrated, and that users of each platform can chat with each other, which is a big deal in the gaming world.
I was going to say, I know I joked about sitting back, but this is huge on so many levels because, one, of course, yes, I know lots of friends of mine who are gamers use Discord all the time, but this gives you the ability to not have to be part of that horrible, horrible experience that is Xbox Live chat with horrible people who say horrible things, and instead you can just communicate with your community that you've set up on Discord. Yeah. I think that's incredible. Right.
Yeah, it's great. And I think it's only for voice right now, so there's no chat, which makes sense. Very few people are chatting with text on an Xbox. But yeah, voice chat, which was the big thing, is finally coming and will be integrated into the Xbox Guide and stuff. So I don't think it requires a dedicated app on Xbox. It's all integrated, so the experience should be seamless, and that's really nice to see.
That is a smart move, actually, on all of their parts. I know Paul regularly talks about how... there's all this talk about trying to deal with the toxicity of Xbox gaming and everything that is going on there and the abuse and whatnot. And he has, you know, regularly said that they don't ever really do much in that way. And I think this is one way where that can be addressed, is if you can, you know, still have the fun of being able to communicate with folks, but in a way where you are more in charge of who is there and who's talking to you and who you talk to. I think that's a really smart move on Xbox's part. And of course, it's a great move for Discord that, I mean, you see people creating new communities all the time on Discord. All right. Well, before we get to tips and picks, I think we'll take another break and then we'll return for the back of the book and everything there. I want to tell you about Infrascale, who are bringing you this episode of Windows Weekly. See, the statistics for ransomware attacks are quite alarming when you dig into them. Cyber criminals can penetrate up to 93% of company networks, according to a report from betanews.com. And it's not just large organizations. 46% of SMBs have been victims of ransomware attacks as well. The Infrascale cloud backup solution is here to help. It'll provide the security you need to manage backups and secures them from hackers or adverse events. You can back up and protect your endpoint data and never pay a ransom, which means you'll sleep easier at night. You can back up SaaS applications, endpoints, servers, as well as execute disaster recovery on site or in the cloud. Every company needs a secure, simple to configure, and easy to manage endpoint data protection solution. Infrascale integrates with Hyper-V and VMware. It enables site-to-site failover with orchestration in the Infrascale cloud. And this is a way for you to keep the hackers at bay. Immutability is at the core of how the product is designed, so your data is encrypted in the storage so no one can alter it. Infrascale backup and disaster recovery is there to help when a server crashes or if you experience a human error, malicious activity, natural disaster. A localized or site-wide incident means unanticipated costs or unplanned downtime. Both come with a price. According to Gartner, this is quite the statistic. The average cost of downtime across all industry sectors is $5,600 per minute. That's about $300,000 per hour. Clients and partners alike, including MSPs and VARs, trust Infrascale backup and recovery solutions to eliminate downtime and data loss with the most cost-effective enterprise-grade data protection solutions to help keep their businesses running. If disaster strikes, your applications, your data, and your systems are recovered and available in record time. The award-winning world-class support is also there to ensure your business is protected 24/7. Now with SSD at no extra charge. Infrascale has a solution for your data protection needs. Whatever your data, whatever your environment, Infrascale provides continuity and resiliency for your business. Visit infrascale.com/twit to get the free ebook, 5 Essential Components of a Ransomware Protection Plan, and learn how to protect your business today. That's Infrascale, infrascale.com/twit. Thanks so much to Infrascale for sponsoring this week's episode of Windows Weekly. And now we are nearing the end of the show. Mary Jo, take it away.
Yeah, I don't know if you wanted to ask for any live listener questions.
Oh, no. We could do that. Yeah.
Yeah. We got people on, you know, Twitter who are listening in, and we got people on the Discord and chat. I think IRC chat, you guys have people, so.
We do, yes. If you've got questions for the guests.
You've got two of the best Windows watchers and Microsoft watchers on the show today, Zach and Rich. So take advantage of this. Chip questions, give them some hard questions. I have one for Zach, actually, if I can start out.
Please go ahead.
All right. Tell us what happened with the Neo, like Surface Neo, right? Like that we saw the Surface Neo dual screen Windows device. It was supposed to run 10X, but okay. Why can't they just still do a Surface Neo type device, dual screen laptop or dual screen portable kind of thing with either running Windows or running Android? Why not? Like, can't they do this?
So the Neo that was announced from a hardware perspective kind of was flawed, as far as I'm aware. Also, it was just sort of hit with blow after blow after it was announced. Mm-hmm. Obviously, yeah. 10X was cancelled along the way, and this was, mm-hmm. device was built with 10X in mind. Not that they couldn't put Windows 11 on it if they really wanted to, but then Intel cancelled the chip it was supposed to ship with, which I think was an Intel Lakefield chip or some kind, the same chip in the Lenovo X1 Fold, I believe. And as far as I'm aware, you know, I have spoken to a number of people who were testing the hardware or knew people who was testing the hardware. And one of the things I consistently heard was the device just ran hot and throttled a lot. It was super thin and didn't have a fan in it. And the Intel chip they were using was not very efficient. So it was just not a great experience. That paired with Windows 10X just not being ready and the emulation or the virtualization tech they were using being quite heavy on the device meant things like Teams didn't work very well on it, and Teams is obviously a vital application for lots of Microsoft employees, and those self-hosting the hardware just weren't able to sort of use Teams on it properly. There were a lot of issues with it, so if they were to ever announce the Neo or ship the Neo again, I think it would be a radically different device. The other thing is I think maybe they've realized that dual screen PCs just aren't going to happen in that way.
I think that's they're not doing dual screen PCs, like, when they killed 10X, they were talking about adding some of those features to Windows 11, or maybe it was rumored that they were going to add some of those features to Windows 11, but they didn't. They are not like Intel. Yeah. Intel has announced an Evo spec for foldables, and OEMs still have to make their own custom software for that to be a good experience. Microsoft is not putting that kind of development into Windows 11.
Yeah.
Last I heard. Yeah. That Lakefield chip was almost like a prototype chip at the time. Mm-hmm. It was like a proof of concept. Like it had the new hybrid architecture, and they were putting it out there for these specialized types of PCs. And I think it was always going to be replaced by 12th gen, where the entire lineup has that hybrid architecture. Like, you could make something new with a 12th gen U9 processor, which is a 9-watt hybrid chip, like a next generation of that Lakefield chip, or you could use an ARM chip, which, you know, like we talked about before, there's going to be some, like Gen 3 is a lot more powerful, and they'll have something even more powerful later on this year. So, yeah. I mean, the hardware could happen. It's just that Microsoft isn't focusing on the software right now. And if they're not focusing on the software, then they're just not doing the hardware.
Yeah, and I think that's because they've just decided that dual screens just isn't going to happen in the Windows space. I don't think there's any OEMs lining up to ship dual screen devices. So I think the next big thing for the Windows PC space will be foldable, single screen foldable. And it wouldn't shock me if Microsoft sort of, if they were to revive the Neo, revive it as a single screen foldable, because you know, later, I think Intel announced that a wave of foldable PCs are coming. And I think Asus has already announced theirs. I think Lenovo's teasing theirs. Lenovo's teasing theirs, and I wouldn't be surprised if Dell and HP have stuff up their sleeves as well. And, you know, if they've got it, if they're working on that stuff, then surely Microsoft is also.
There's a good question I saw earlier on. Does the new schedule for updates, this idea that there are going to be more moments that take place, mean that maybe seekers won't have to use the beta, what is it called? The beta circle, the beta ring. What is it now these days? and instead can get fun new stuff all the time. Is this a way to kind of give people the opportunity to seek out new things without having to be in those other tracks or rings?
Well, the features will still be tested in the dev and beta channels before they're deemed ready to roll out, of course. I don't think Microsoft is just going to drop new features to the production, you know, version of Windows without any testing. So if you wanted access to features earlier, then the Insider program will probably still be the way to go about that. But yeah, for end users, they will be getting new features more frequently. But they will still have gone through testing first. They're not just going to roll those features out to everybody without testing them.
And then Robo in the chat says, as an Android user, what I want is updates and support. How likely is Microsoft to support the Duo, and for how long?
The original Duo?
Didn't they... the original Duo. So they said that the original Duo was going to be supported for 3 years. 3 years of major updates. I'm not too sure if they said anything longer for security updates. The Duo one so far has had one major feature update, technically. I think it was probably destined for Android 13 before things are thrown into question, whereas the Duo 2, I guess, is 1 year newer, so Android 14. So, yeah, there's a long way to go for the Duo 2, at least, in regards to updates. But the Duo 1 is, I would say, maybe halfway through its life cycle at this point, maybe a bit more.
Do you think that they'll stick to that three-year life cycle when they seem to run about a year behind on these updates?
Yeah. When the Duo 1 first launched, I had heard that Microsoft will have to pay Qualcomm for the extra year because they are a year behind for continued updates on Android. So they have committed to that, I believe. So, yeah.
Okay. And then Mary Jo, there was a question.
For Windows 7. Yes, a Windows 7 question. So last week, there were some rumors based on code that somebody found in one of the beta builds of Windows that suggested that Microsoft might be extending the possibility of buying support contracts for Windows 7 past January 2023. So they had a three-year extension where each year beyond when support ended, you could pay to continue to get security updates for Windows 7. It was super expensive, like something only enterprises would do. And you had to jump through all these hoops to get the extended support. So there was a rumor that Microsoft might be extending it past January 2023 if people were willing to pay for it. And so this week, I finally got an answer from Microsoft, and they said, nope, we are not extending it past January 2023. That's the end of it for Windows 7. No more security updates. So that's the official answer on that.
Well, there you heard it. It's coming to an end for real this time. We promise. We're serious. Stop making that face. I'm telling you the truth. And then someone asks, Microsoft has the SQ series SoCs for the Surface 10. Is there any indication they would have a custom branded SoC for Surface Duo and future mobile devices?
No. No. I'll tell you why. But here's the thing. A custom branded is what that is, right? And just because also in Surface Laptop, they have the AMD Ryzen Surface Edition chips, which are maybe a little bit tweaked, but they are very much just rebranded processors. The SQ1 was a Snapdragon 8CX. I think it had a slightly higher clock speed, but that is it. They are not custom processors. And Microsoft kind of does this in a way to, I guess, make the processors look better, so they use AMD and Qualcomm because they're lesser partners than Intel. On the phone side of things, Qualcomm is the power player like Intel is on PCs. So I don't think you'll ever see any kind of custom Qualcomm chip that goes in a Surface Duo.
There you go. All right. I think that's the end of the Q&A. If you're ready to move on to the back of the book, Mary Jo.
We are. And we've got some picks and tips from our guests today.
Awesome.
Yep. So let's see. We'll do app pick one, which is from Zach. He has an interesting app that he told me about in the Microsoft Store today, Unigram, which is a Telegram for Windows.
Yeah, this is a universal Telegram client. So if you use Telegram on your phone, or if you use the Windows the actual official Telegram client for Windows. This is a UWP version of that, which is great for multiple reasons. One, it can receive notifications, push notifications when closed. So it's just like a phone app in that regard. Two, it's compiled for Windows and R natively. The official Telegram client isn't, unfortunately. So you will get better performance using this client if you're using a Surface Pro X, for example. And three, the UI is just nicer. It uses WinUI and looks, you know, follows the Windows 11 design language. And although it is an unofficial Telegram client, I believe people who work at Telegram do work on this client. So it's, although it is unofficial, it does have Telegram's official blessing, as far as I'm aware. And it's really nice. It's fast. It loads fast. It's a UWP app. So I believe it's a UWP app. It looks like a UWP app and it works great. So yeah, I reckon if you use Telegram frequently on your Windows PC, especially if you are using Windows on ARM, definitely give Unigram a try because it's really nice.
Nice. All right, app pick two is a gaming pick from our friend Rich. He had to go and spoil.
Yes, the way you said that is a gaming pick.
I wanted to make sure that there was some Xbox on the show. This was very, very important. So there's a game. I don't know if anybody's heard of it. It's called Forza Horizon 5. Okay. There's a new Hot Wheels expansion pack. They've done this before with previous Forza Horizon games, and it's a ton of fun. And as the image showed, you're pretty much driving around on Hot Wheels tracks. And so they announced it not too long ago, a month or two ago, whatever. But it's available now. It came out yesterday. And if you have Forza Horizon 5 Premium, you can download the expansion from the Microsoft Store, the Xbox app, or whatever they're making you download games from today. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. If you have the premium edition, you should totally go and get it. Like, just watch the video. Like, it's so much fun. I was playing it all night last night. If you don't have the premium edition, you can get just this expansion for $19.99. There's an expansions bundle for $34.99, but the premium add-ons bundle, which pretty much, you know, promotes you to the premium edition completely, is actually $10 off. So that's $39.99. So that's probably an even better deal than just getting the expansions bundle. But yeah, if you've got the premium edition, go get it.
Nice. I'm kind of surprised you didn't pick a new game called Stray, which I've even
I wanted that to be your Xbox pick.
Yeah, you know? I don't do Xbox picks.
My partner has been playing it nonstop on the PlayStation and loves it, absolutely loves it. And it seems really cool. It's really well designed.
Yeah, so it's about cats, stray cats, like in a cyberpunk world or something, right? And now there's even a Twitter account where somebody has started it. It's called Cats Watch Stray on Twitter. And it's just pictures of people's cats and dogs. I see Tom Warren's dog.
That's
in
great.
There, watching Stray.
They use like real meows of cats, and it always changes. I can only speak for the PlayStation. He's got the PS5. And so when he's playing, the meows come out of the controller itself. So my dogs are also going like, what the heck is happening over here? I think that's part of the reason why people's pets are paying attention is because of the sounds that are playing whenever the cat's walking around.
Nice. All right. I did not do an Xbox pick, but I do have an enterprise pick. This is another pick from the Microsoft Inspire Partner Conference this week. So, you know, Microsoft's been announcing a lot of things they call industry clouds lately, and industry clouds are vertical clouds. So what they do is they take all the different pieces of stuff they call the Microsoft cloud. So there's Azure, there's Dynamics 365, there's Microsoft 365/Office 365, there's a Power Platform, and they bundle these things up with some custom templates and some custom workflows, various APIs, and they sell these things as a vertical cloud. So they already have Microsoft Cloud for healthcare, for retail, for manufacturing. They even have a horizontal cloud that's part of this called the Microsoft Cloud for Sustainability. This week, they announced another one that's kind of a weird outlier in a way. It's called the Microsoft Cloud for Sovereignty. So sovereignty is one of these weird buzzwords that's really becoming very prominent in the enterprise space. You often hear people talk about data sovereignty. That idea is, if you're in a country where there are really strict requirements about where data can reside, that okay. you need to pay attention to the rules around sovereignty. So what Microsoft's doing is they're creating this cloud for sovereignty that's going to be customized by partners in the different countries for each kind of custom situation. And it's going to have everything you need around governance, around security, around data residency, a lot of other standards that matter to countries in terms of how data is managed, where it's stored, how people access it and who can access it. And they're going to sell this as the Microsoft Cloud for Sovereignty. I was talking to a Microsoft partner today, one of my friends, who said Microsoft's really all in on this industry cloud push. Like, they're really going more and more vertical. Like, you hear them talking about vertical this, vertical that, more than ever. And he said, I'm not so sure partners sell that way, right? Like, he thinks partners tend to sell more generic solutions that can be applied across industries. So he's wondering how the uptake is going to be on this. But I can tell you, based on some of these sessions I was watching at Inspire, this is Microsoft's. This is going to be a new buzzword. When we do our next buzzword drinking bingo card, this is going to be on it. Vertical cloud, industry cloud, sovereignty, all those words are going to be very important. And we'll probably hear about them on earnings next week, too, I bet. So, yeah, that's my enterprise pick.
Awesome. Sovereignty.
Sovereignty.
And now we head into the secrets. Secret secrets with the code name pick of the week.
Yeah. So this is a really weird one, too. Several years ago, Microsoft was working on some technology through Microsoft Research for doing drone simulations. I don't know if Zach or Rich remembers this, but we were at one of the Microsoft events and they had a maker of drones there, and they were talking about how they were working with Microsoft on simulating drones. And there's all this cool AI technology behind it. Including something called Project Bonsai, which Microsoft is based on another thing that Microsoft bought years ago. Okay, so cut to now. Microsoft kills off this AirSim work that they're doing with Microsoft Research. And then this week they launched something called Project AirSim. So add the word project in front of AirSim. And this is a new thing now, right? It does the exact same thing. It's simulation for autonomous aerospace vehicles, including drones, planes, you know, hobbyist drones, but also professional drones. If you think about the applications for this, it's things like drones that fly over power plants or over crop fields, and they can send back images to people so that they don't have to go out to these fields in case something breaks or in case they need to do repairs. The Project AirSim technology, which is now in preview, lets you kind of check out how this will look with all these thousands or millions of AI simulations that Microsoft has generated and is making available to customers of Project AirSim. So I was like, oh, this is interesting. They announced this right before their Inspire conference. Well, then I found out actually AWS announced some drone technology this week. So that's probably why they announced Project AirSim this week.
Okay, now that makes sense.
It does. But yeah, that's the code name. Project AirSim, AirSim.
All right. And then last but not least, it's time for a drink.
Yes. Instead of doing a beer pick this week, I am doing a drink pick. I've been drinking a lot of this because it's been so hot. And sometimes when it's really hot, I don't even want to drink a beer. That's how hot it is. Like, even a cold beer doesn't sound like a good drink. So I don't know if you guys, anybody on the show or listeners have ever had a thing called Agua de Jamaica. It's basically hibiscus iced tea.
And this is what Leo's always talking about. He's mentioned this stuff a lot.
It is delicious. So a lot of Mexican restaurants here, and I'm sure everywhere, have this. So what you do is you brew hibiscus leaves with sugar and water, and you chill it, and then you add some crushed ice and you add some lime juice, and it is so refreshing. It's like way more refreshing than even drinking water. I put a recipe for it in case anybody wants to try making it at home. Like, you can get hibiscus leaves on Amazon, and you can get them like at specialty markets and stores. My one caution is if you make this, this stains very, very badly. It can stain your dishes. It can stain your strainers and spoons and even definitely your clothes. So if you splash any of this on you, you're going to turn bright pink. But it's worth it because the drink is so delicious and refreshing. No calories, basically, or very few calories. And it's good for children, good for adults, no alcohol. I know, I'm doing a non-alcoholic drink pick today.
What?
But, it's totally worth making. I've already made so much of it like this past week. I feel like I'm going to turn bright pink pretty soon because I've been drinking a lot of it. But yeah, it's a very, very refreshing iced tea that you should try.
It sounds amazing. And like I said, Leo's mentioned it in the past, and he made his with a sugar-free sweetener and used too much of it, so it resulted in some stomach upset. But if you play it right, then I think it could probably be very refreshing. That sounds really good. All right. Well, I think that brings us to the end of this episode of Windows Weekly. Of course, we have to thank the Mary Jo Foley of allaboutmicrosoft.com, the ZDNet blog. Thank you for your time this week.
Yeah, it was great. It was really fun to have the mice come to play while the cats were away.
Thinking of Leo and Paul as cats, and I guess some very grumpy cats, huh?
Yeah, they can be sometimes. Yes, they can.
And of course, thank you to our incredible guests, Rich Woods, managing editor at XDA. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. This was lots of fun.
It was. Yeah. It was so fun.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a great time, I think. Yeah. Like you said, it's like being at Rattle and just talking about
hanging
this stuff.
Out. Exactly.
Next time the cats are away, I think we know who's around, as well as Zach Bowden, senior editor at Windows Central. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, this has been a blast. I can't wait to do it again. Hopefully we get to do it again soon.
Yes, yes. I know. We have people on Discord saying, tell the guests they can come back anytime. Please let them know. So seems to be a win-win.
Yes, an absolute a win. Let me see. 1, 2, 3. Win-win-win. In any case, thank you all for tuning in this week. Of course, you can check out Windows Weekly as we record the show live every Wednesday starting at 11 a.m. Pacific time at twit.tv/live. But the best way to get the show is by subscribing to the show, which you can do by going to twit.tv/ww. When you go there, you will see links to subscribe to audio or video. Clicking on those will show you the different places where it's available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. We try to be in all those places. And also, I should mention, don't forget to check out Club Twit, twit.tv/clubtwit. For $7 a month, you can join the club. I believe it's $84 a year if you want to go for the annual plan. And by joining the club, well, you get quite a few things. First, you get access to your own personal feeds that have no ads in them, so it's just the content. You get access to the Twit Plus bonus feed that has extra content you won't find anywhere else. It's behind the scenes, before the show, after the show, plus some fun stuff that we hosts put out every once in a while. And access to the Club Twit Discord server. That's a place where you can go to chat with your fellow Club Twit members, share lots of funny images, and have a good time, and also chat with those of us here at Twit. twit.tv/clubtwit is how you sign up for that. And also, you can now check out, I believe it's out. Now I've got to check to make sure, but definitely you can check out my show that is a Club Twit exclusive show. It is called Hands on Mac. Don't tell Mary Jo about it. But also Hands on Windows, which is live. That's Paul Thurrott's show that is available as part of Club Twit. So great stuff there. twit.tv/clubtwit to check it out. I think that's it. That's it and that's all. Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Windows Weekly. Leo Laporte will be back next week, as will Paul Thurrott. And so you'll be able to see them then. Until next time, goodbye.
The world is changing rapidly. So rapidly, in fact, that it's hard to keep up. That's why Micah Sargent and I, Jason Howell, talk with the people making and breaking the tech news on Tech News Weekly every Thursday. They know these stories better than anyone, so why not get them to talk about it in their own words? Subscribe to Tech News Weekly, and you won't miss a beat every Thursday at twit.tv.